Oh, my name's Christian. Forgot to introduce myself. I'm the lead pastor here at City Light. And so if this is your first time here, so glad that you are here. I hope we get a chance to meet you personally on the way out today. But we're here to be part of our community, as you can see, with that 100 hours of service. And I just think that that is one of those things that we need to just keep celebrating because it was a lot of work. And I love all the pictures at the end, just to see, like, there were so many different ways that we served and so many different organizations that we served with. Really, really just, I think, makes Jesus's heart really, really glad, you know? I think that it just is what the church is meant to be doing. So, again, great job, guys, on that. So this week, we're doing our last teaching in our One Another series. So we've been going through talking about building a community here at City Light. There would be a community for people who are looking for relationship, for true relationship. And our vision statement at City Light is seek, love, and care for people like Jesus does. So we talk a lot about the seeking, which is where we're inviting people in and making a space that is non-judgmental, a space that's accessible and understandable so that you can invite your friend, your neighbor, your family member who maybe has never been to church or hasn't been to church in 10 years or was hurt by the church, has different various backgrounds. So we try to create a space where people can come in and start to get to know what we're all about without feeling pressure to understand everything or even believe everything up front. Seek, love, and care is what the 100 hours is all about. We want to care for the community we live in. So the love part of our vision is what we do here. We create a community. So we've talked about being a community that's encouraging and uplifting, a community that is willing to work through the hard times with each other, a community that's humble and willing to give of ourselves to each other. And so I'm just excited to end the series today, and I'm going to show a clip here to get started from a show that if you're of a certain age, you definitely watched all of these, and we probably have differing opinions on how the show ended, okay? You'll know what I mean when you watch this. So this is from the show Lost. This is from like one of the first four or five episodes when Jack first asserts his leadership. And I know that there was like Team Jack. I personally was Team Jack. I love that guy. I would like to think I'd be kind of like him if I was stuck on an island. But so he's going to give us a little speech here, and then we'll get into the teaching. Deep, right? If we can't live together, we're going to die alone. And I know I thought about this for a while, and I thought that's a little extreme for church. But I'm going to go with it, all right? So here's what I'll talk about today. Seriously, we either live together, we either grow together, we either learn to build community together where we do the things we've talked about, where we encourage each other, where we're willing to go through the hard times with each other. See, no one is looking for shallow community, and no one needs it either. No one's looking for community that's just there when life's easier or that's just hi and goodbye. No one's looking for more acquaintances in their life. What we're looking for is real and true community that is saying, my life is a mess, things are falling apart, and people are coming towards me instead of going away from me. That's community, where people are putting their own desires and their own needs second for your desires and your needs. That's community. And see, this is the thing. We're living in a culture right now where this is not true. This is not what's being practiced. We're living in a culture where camps are constantly being made. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. Just read the news for like 30 seconds or get on Facebook for 30 seconds. We've lost the ability as a culture to debate and still be kind to one another. We've become a culture where you're either for me or you're against me, where if you believe what I believe, then everything you do and say is good. And if you disagree with me, then not only did you disagree with me, but you're morally bankrupt and you're a horrible person. We've become so divisive that we've lost the ability to see things from another person's perspective, to carry each other's burdens, to put ourselves in other people's shoes. And we're just constantly demonizing and estranging and creating space between ourselves instead of connecting and finding common ground and building bridges. And if the church is part of that, then we're never going to fulfill the mission that Jesus gave us. Jesus said, go out into all the world and bring people to me. We can't do that if we're division bringers. We can only do that if we're bridge builders. So how are we going to do this? How are we going to be a model community? That's the church's call, in my opinion. We're supposed to represent what community would look like if Jesus were in charge of a community. That's it. That's our call. And we're supposed to bring that community to the world. And so often we've got that all backwards. We're trying to fit into the community around us, or we're trying to or exclude people from being part of our community. So I know we started off on kind of an intense note there. So I'm just gonna bring it down here for a second. I just want to tell you that I have lived this out. I know this to be true. I almost died recently. I just want to prove to you. The really disturbing part of this picture is how happy this paramedic is. Look, they're supposed to be saving my life. And he's like, wait, someone's taking a picture? Let me stop and smile. Yeah, I don't even remember that guy's name. But yeah, this was not the car accident, by the way. And I will tell you, I didn't post anything on social media. And I'm going to be totally honest, because it's very embarrassing to me that I've had to go to the emergency room twice in about a month and a half. I'm like walking on eggshells now, just hoping nothing else happens to me. So I was with some friends, and we were playing disc golf up in Jim Thorpe at Hickory Run. And I'm allergic to bees, and I got stung. My friend Jordan insisted it was a mosquito because Jordan is apparently an idiot and has no knowledge of insects at all. But yeah, he was like checking me out, and he's like, oh, I think it's just a mosquito. He gets his phone out. Is Jordan here today? He's not. He gets his phone out and he's like Googling mosquito bites and comparing it to my neck. I got stung like right on my neck. And I'm like, Jordan, I know the difference. Have you ever been stung by or bitten by a mosquito and wondered if it was a bee? No, it's totally different. Right. So anyway, I started to have an allergic reaction, and we were 35 minutes away from the nearest hospital. I thought that I didn't have my EpiPen, which ironically I did. But I didn't know it, and so I didn't have it because I didn't know I had it, which is also another whole teaching about things that you don't know that you have, but you do have. But we'll save that one for later. Maybe you'll get to see this picture again. But if I had been alone, I'm not going to say I would have definitely died, but it would have been a lot scarier. If I'd have been walking, because I do like to go out hiking by myself in the woods. If I had been alone 35 minutes away from a hospital, it would have been very tough for me to drive myself anywhere. I almost passed out twice, and you know, these are not things you're proud of as an adult, right? But like, I had to like hold on to Jordan as he like Googled mosquito bites. It's like, hey, pay attention, buddy. Chris Fraser like got into the car and held me. Really, he did, so I wouldn't fall over. And like, I had to have AC blown on my face. But anyway, it's okay. I didn't die. But what happened was, you know, the allergic reaction kind of peaked, and then as it came back down, the paramedics finally arrived from like 6 hours away. And that's why we're both smiling, because I was totally fine, and this was a useless trip to the hospital. I should have just told him to go away. But really, by myself, that would have been. I was pretty scared. I'm gonna be honest. I was pretty scared. Because when Jordan said the nearest thing was 35 minutes away, the last time I got stung, I had to be taken to the emergency room, and my tongue was swelling up, and I didn't go into full anaphylactic shock or anything like that, but it was scary enough that I had to go and get steroids and stuff like that. So in my mind, I'm thinking, it gets worse every time, no one's around here, these guys are making fun of me. No, they were very, very supportive. And so this is what it's about. If we are alone, we are unprotected. And I could show you so many different verses from the Bible that reiterate this, but this is true of life. When we hit hard times, because you're going to, when you hit difficulties in life, you can either, and what we do is we love to go it alone. We love to face it on our own. We love to, you know, fight, you know, we'd rather not be embarrassed and say, hey, let me tell you that I've been depressed lately, or hey, let me tell you that my marriage has been difficult lately, or hey, let me tell you that I'm not sure what the meaning of life is anymore because I just turned 41. Not that that's me. Right, but we'd rather just like make everyone or hope everyone or think everyone thinks that we're okay. Here's the lie, no one's okay. So we're all just sitting around thinking, well, I hope they think I'm okay because I'm not okay, and they're thinking, I hope you think you're okay because I'm not okay. We'll just all be honest, and we can support one another. All right, so in an article that I read in Psychology Today, in 1985, in a random survey, people said they had three confidants, three people that they could tell anything to. By 2004, that had dropped to one on average, which means 25% of the people actually answered zero. So if you were asked, how many people could you open up to, could you share something deep about your life with, 25% of people in America, so I did some quick math. My math friends in the audience would be proud of me, maybe. I looked up how many people live in America, and I took 25% of it. 81 million people. Just think about that. Brandon, is that good? You like that? I don't know. I did this math, so it's today's. Yes, today's amount. I guarantee, look, Chris Simmons is texting me right now. He's even got his, he's texting me, telling, yep, see, look. Chris Simmons is our sound man. Let's give him a hand. Thank you for all the work you do, Chris. He's also the resident fact checker, and every time I get off stage, there's something that I've done wrong. So 81 million people with no confidants. Now, that means I doubt that means they're hermits, right? There can't be 81 million hermits living in America. So they're living in society. We're probably in this room, and you just don't know if you have anyone you could really be honest with, if anyone really knew me. And I was reading, I'm reading a really good book. It's called Preaching, and it's about talking about faith in a culture that is full of skepticism. And so it's a really good book, but he's talking about these cultural narratives that are widely accepted. And one of the cultural narratives is the narrative of society. Now just follow me for a second, because this is really, really interesting to me, but is one of those things that I'm a little afraid will be interesting to no one else. So, you know, this is the part you can forget if you don't like it. He is saying that in ancient times, so kind of before Jesus and Christianity came on the scene, the group was more important than the individual. So the welfare of the tribe came before the welfare of the person. And there wasn't a whole lot of sanctity of life or value of life. There weren't a whole lot of people thinking, man, I wonder what I was created to do. It was all about survival of the tribe. Then with Christianity brought this idea of the value of self. And it's so interesting that I want you to get that the roots of that idea are found in Jesus, who said that, no, you are made in the image of God, that every person, no matter tribe, tongue, or nation, right? If you're Jew or Gentile or Greek or, you know, there's all those lists, right? Male or female, kids or adults, everyone is valuable. That's rooted in the God of the universe saying you're valuable and breaking down all the walls in between. What's happened is secular modern society, today's late modern society, so it's kind of postmodern, late modern society, has taken that idea but divorced it, cut it at the roots of faith, because faith is, you know, for people who don't think. So now we have individualism as the highest goal. The greatest good is your choice. And the greatest evil is to take anyone's choice away from them. And so individualism, divorced from the fact that you get your individualism from God, becomes its own thing. And what's scary about that is then it's all on you to get by in life. It's all on you to figure out your meaning. It's all on you to figure out your purpose. It's all on you to decide your destiny. There's no one else speaking destiny into your life. And if you follow this rabbit trail further, you're not defined by what other people say or think or do around you. And so the individual has been elevated above community, above each other. And yet Jesus, oh, here, I want to read this to you. This just reinforces what I was saying. And this is from another study in Scientific America. And it's called Why Are We Wired to Connect? In the West, we like to think of ourselves as relatively immune to the sway of those around us while we each pursue our personal destiny. This is what the other book I'm reading was talking about. I think this is a story that we like to tell ourselves rather than what actually happens. We are profoundly shaped. Okay, this isn't a religious writing, just so we're aware, right? This is not a Christian writing. We are profoundly shaped by our social environment. We suffer greatly when our social bonds are threatened or severed. We may not like the fact that we're wired such that our well-being depends on our connections with others, but the facts are the facts. And I've read other articles, but I don't want to spend forever on this, that talk about the benefits and the dangers of having confidants, having close friends, having connections. So having connections is related to lower degrees of heart disease. Isn't that crazy? Longer lifespan. And things like anxiety and depression and suicidal rates all go up the less connections you have. The physical toll it takes on your body is worse than smoking, and it's worse than, it's one other thing, I can't remember now, sorry. But it's worse than these other obvious things we think of when we think they're bad. Oh, lack of exercise. So lack of friends, lack of connection, lack of community is worse for you than lack of exercise. Isn't that crazy? Our well-being depends on our connections with others, and yet we live in this society right now that's preaching individualism, you above all else. But Jesus has this to say: greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Doesn't that fly in the face of individualism being the highest good? Jesus was preaching to a culture that was already living a lot of this. And I think he was prophetically speaking to us today. This is love. This is community. Not that I make sure that my rights are not infringed upon and that I get to do whatever I want to do. See, there's this thing called negative freedom and positive freedom. Negative freedom, all right, is when you, It's a little bit complicated. I'm just going to edit this part out of the podcast. Let me switch. Positive freedom is when you have the freedom to do good, okay? And I can't remember what negative freedom is now. If I start to talk about it, it'll probably sound really stupid. What is negative freedom? It's based around what you're not allowed to do things that harm other people. There it is. Got it. So negative freedom is that you can do whatever you want to as long as it doesn't hurt other people. That's negative freedom. And there's boundless negative freedom in our current individualistic society. But positive freedom is what Jesus gives, and it's a freedom to give to other people. So lay down one's life for one's friends. By this, everyone will know. So this is what we're talking about, community. If you love each other like this, that's how people will know you're a follower of Jesus. Now, there's other ways that people will know. But what if Jesus was laying this down as the litmus test? How will 21st century, 2018 Americans know that I'm a follower of Jesus? If I love other people like Jesus loved me, if I love other people by laying down my life for them, if I'm part of a community where I'm so invested that it can be said of me, I've laid down my life for someone. You can't lay down your life for someone you don't ever spend time with. This is what I want to look at today and get into this. What does God say about this? So I want to talk to you about this people group. There's a book in the Bible called Hebrews. It's really a fascinating book because no one really knows who wrote it. It's really interesting. I'm pretty sure that Paul didn't write this one. There's some argument that Aquila and Priscilla. Priscilla is the female. They're a couple in the early church that led a church in their house. And there's some argument that Priscilla actually wrote this, which would be radical, right, for that society to have a female write a book of the Bible. But no one really, really knows. I'm pretty sure it's not Paul, though. So this is a fascinating book, and it's written to, can you guess which group of people? The Hebrews. There you go. All right. So he's writing to this group that has already suffered. All right, so they've gone through some sort of a persecution for their faith in Jesus. Just showing you verse 32. Remember those earlier days when you had received the light. So when you first found Jesus, you endured a great conflict of suffering. And he goes on to describe all the ways in which they suffered or they stood by as their friends suffered. So he's setting this up. The suffering had been so bad and there was a sense it was coming back. That's why he's writing this letter. They've suffered and gotten through it, and now there's another season of suffering and persecution about to come upon them. And he's saying, listen, some of you have given up and turned your backs on all that we've learned and all we've been given. So he's saying, the suffering has been so bad, and now you see it coming again. Have you ever been there? Where you got through one thing, and then all of a sudden you see another one coming. And you're like, I don't know if we can do it again. I don't know if we can handle that again. And this is what he's about to talk about. They've been through hell, and it's coming again. Side note, isn't it amazing? Like, if we were making all this up, if this was all, like, fantasy or made-up writing, it's so interesting to me because over and over and over again in the New Testament, the writers tell on themselves in ways that you wouldn't do if you were trying to make up this magical story. This is just a true story. And why would they put in here that people are walking away from the faith? It's so interesting. It's like when Jesus, in the Gospels, and Jesus goes up to heaven, and there's people standing around who watch him ascend into heaven, and then it says, and some doubted. It's like, number one, how could you doubt if you just saw that heavenly thing happen? And number two, why would you put that in there? It's just interesting how they always tell on themselves. So if you're someone who struggles with faith, the Bible's for you. If you're someone who struggles with faith, the writers of the Bible struggled with faith. If you're someone who has questions, who's skeptical, these are the guys who were in the early church slugging it out. They even got to meet Jesus, and yet they still struggled. So you're in good company. Don't give up. So they were suffering. Another wave of suffering was coming along, and he gave two things for them to do. Draw near to God and draw near to each other. And so we're going to land the plane here this morning. So he says, first, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings. This is one of those beautiful verses that is good to memorize. Let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promises is faithful. And let us consider how we can draw near to each other. Let us consider how we can draw near to, let us consider, let us think about, let us spend time thinking about my relationships. Relationships don't happen on accident. Community doesn't happen on accident. Let us consider, let us give effort to community. Let us give effort to making relationships. Consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. This is, you know, some of what Jonathan talked about the first week of this series, but we're moving people towards love. And just to get into the background a little bit, the Greek word love there, Greek has a couple different words for love, and this is the word agape, which is the highest form of love, which is unconditional love. Let us consider how we can encourage each other to love each other with unconditional love. I heard a great teaching that I'd love for you all to listen to, and maybe I'll remember to post it, but this guy taught, and his tagline was, love like you've never been hurt before. And it has stuck with me for like a half a year now. Can you imagine trying to love like you've never been hurt before? That's agape love. Love each other like no one's ever let you down. Love each other like you've never had a broken heart. Love each other with fullness of trust and assurance. Now, I'm not saying get walked all over, become codependent, become an enabler. But there's some kind of love in the body of Christ that should exist here that isn't everywhere. Spur one another on towards that kind of love and towards doing good. Sounds a lot like City Light to me. It does. That sounds like our vision statement right there. Not giving up meeting together. Here's the payoff verse. This is where I want you to just, if you haven't listened yet, because you're still thinking how ridiculous I looked on that stretcher, tune in right now. You know, if you've been thinking about our event afterwards and you're wondering how many times you'll get to make me fall into the dunk tank, or you're thinking how many hot dogs you might be able to eat, focus now. All right, I promise I'll stay in the dunk tank. This is what I want to say. Let us consider how to build this kind of community, but don't stop meeting together. Step number one is so obvious. Some of them stop meeting together, as some of you are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching, he's saying, persecution's coming. I know some of you are losing faith, and the other thing you're doing is you're losing community. And I'll tell you what, that's what I pray for on a daily basis for City Light. God, we pray for people who are far from you and far from community. Sometimes people need community before they can have faith. Sometimes people need to be loved and accepted and welcomed in before they can find faith. That actually might be radical for some of you to hear. Some people need to belong here before they can believe. Or maybe we just need to let them belong, regardless of whether they end up believing, because we're supposed to be a place of hope and healing for all nations. So not giving up meeting together. It's so simple, but honestly, in my life, it's difficult. Is it difficult in your life? Is it hard for you to get to church every Sunday? Is it hard for you to get to small group? He's telling you, listen, your faith is under fire. Your life is difficult. You've been stung by a rabid bee in the middle of nowhere. You can either live together or you can die alone, but living together doesn't happen on accident. Community doesn't happen without an investment of time. You and I, if we really believe in this community thing, we've all of us, every single one, it's on all of us. We need you and you need me. I need you and you need me. That's what I meant to say. Every time you show up to church, every time you show up to small group, every time you show up to an outreach event, the people around there need you. You're giving them something. I don't care if today's your first day at City Light, you walk into this building with something that other people in here need. Your presence is encouraging. The words that you speak to each other, we need each other. But community doesn't happen without an investment of time. Man, I'll tell you what, we had small group in the spring. It was not highly attended, but one of our favorite small groups happened where it was just me and Mandy. Week three, no one came. It was okay. Me, Mandy, Elliot, and Matea, and Eden, and Samuel sat around the table and ate all of the snacks that we provided. It was really fun. We had a nice family night. The next week, three people showed up. And you know what was great? There was a little bit of hesitation to me, like, maybe we should just tell them they can go home. Right? Like, it's not really a small group. Like, maybe they're like, oh, man, right? But We just we didn't do like group. We didn't do like a, you know, sit around a circle and, you know, play a game, or, you know, we just hung out for like two. Actually, it was probably one of our longer small groups, and we really got to know each other. And I thought, man, you just have to invest time. You know, I was hanging out with some guys over the weekend, a couple weekends ago, and I had to leave early to go support my son at a soccer game. And I had a choice to just be like, done. I knew I could drive an hour back to where they were and meet them for dinner and then drive an hour back home. So that means I drove 2 hours home, watch my kid's game, drive an hour back, and then drive an hour back. It's like, is that worth it? Like, it's a sacrifice for me. It's a sacrifice for my family. But sometimes you need to make an investment. I need community. Guys, I can tell you, there was a time like, what was it? Like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago where Mandy and I were sitting in the kitchen and I was like, Mandy, I don't think I have any real friends. I've got a lot of people who are like, you know, whatever. We can joke around and I know them. But let's be honest, I hang out with teenagers all the time because I was a youth pastor. All my spare time, all my small groups, everything I do on Sunday morning, teenagers, teenagers, teenagers. I love teenagers, but there comes an age where teenagers shouldn't be your only friends. I love being friends with teenagers. And I'll be honest, what's made me enjoy youth ministry my whole life is I don't see a difference. So like Ethan and I can have a great conversation and his father Joe and I can have a great conversation. I don't see a whole lot of difference. Actually, they're very similar. So sometimes I can't tell a difference. But at like 35, I probably should have a few people who are over 18 who are my friends. And so Mandy is like, well, we need to make sacrifices as a family for you to get to things where people are hanging out. That's the only way you're going to make friends. It doesn't happen without an investment of time. It doesn't happen without a sacrifice. Hey, the band can come up. It doesn't happen without sacrifice. Community is never going to be easy, guys. Can you just, I don't do this. Like, I don't make people say things, but like in your head, just say to yourself, community will never be easy. Say it in your head. Did y'all say it? Okay, good. All right. It's never going to be easy. Just anticipate if you're planning to go to church, something's going to go wrong. If you're planning to go to small group, one of your kids is going to, you know, have really bad stomach pain. One of your kids is going to, you know, spill something. Your flat tire on your car. I mean, stung by a bee. You never know, right? It's like community requires sacrifice. You got to just like, if you're going to be in a community, you got to just put your head down and like just go through it. Like, yep, I know, got homework. Yep, I know, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just like, you got to do it. You should see our family on small group night. It's insane. We've got like soccer practices and homework. You got to try to eat dinner. We got to try to like clean the whole house because it's already clean, but there's another level of clean, super clean, that we have to do before people get there. And like, it's just like, and there are times when we're like, it'd be easier if we didn't have small group, but it's worth it if you want to have community. If you never want to have anyone there for you, when you go through a hard time, when you're going through a difficult time, when you need prayer, when you need support in life, then don't invest and don't sacrifice. Lastly, community doesn't happen without vulnerability. We've got to consider how we can spur one another on. We've got to consider how we can be real with each other. All these things we've talked about, encouragement, humility, being real with each other, doing the hard work, it's all going to not matter if we don't do this. Do not forsake meeting together. Do not forget to meet together, as some are in the practice of doing. I'm going to just challenge you. Where could you apply this to your life? Maybe you need to go to church more than once a month. I'm not going to look at anybody. I'm just going to close my eyes. Wait, did you guys all know that we meet every week? I don't know. Maybe some of you didn't know. We do. We're here every Sunday. Isn't that so cool? You thought it was every other week. Oh, I see the confusion. We're starting small groups September 16th. They also happen every week. I don't know if you knew that, but only for 8 weeks because we know you don't want to commit for your whole life. Neither do I. If you want community, you have to do these things. I didn't mean to say that. I meant these things. That sounds so manipulative. If you want community, you have to do these things. No, I'm just saying, here's some ways that you can find community that you can, what did the verse say? The verse said, don't stop meeting together. Here's some ways that we meet together. We meet every Sunday morning. And then when we started this church, I made a commitment. We made a commitment to trying to make getting invested as easy as possible. So we don't do 100 things. We do three. Three things. Seriously. Small groups, 3 semesters a year, 8 weeks each. Go to one. Outreaches. We do them a lot. At least once a month. I'm telling you. I love what Trisha said. Trisha was on the video, and she doesn't want me to point her out, so she's not in the room. But Trisha, she talked about how not only was it good to invest in other, but we became closer too, right? Partner teams. I know I talked about that last week, but you sign up for a partner team, you're guaranteed to make friends unless you're really bad at your job. But our jobs are so easy, I'm telling you. These are some ways that I would love for everyone here to find some community. We don't want anyone to die alone, okay? So stand up, please. We're gonna sing one more song. Here's what we do at City Light. We have a response and reflection time where we take a moment to sing so that we're not just rushing through. We're not just rushing through the teaching and kind of forgetting what we've talked about. So we're gonna give you a moment just to sing a song if you'd like to sing. I was lying when I put take communion on there. We're gonna do that next week, so just pretend like that's not there. We will do communion next week. So you can receive prayer, and you can also receive prayer for somebody else if there's someone in your family or in your life who's going through a hard time. But listen, be vulnerable. If you're going through a hard time, all you do is go over there and they just say, hey, what's your name? What are you going through? Let me pray for you. You don't have to do anything. You just stand there. Just don't look at them the whole time. It's awkward. And also, while we're singing, you could write out a commitment to yourself of what's one thing you're going to do. What's one thing you're going to do in September to up your commitment to community? Because you need it. And we need you. When you go to small group, it's not just about you. It's about the people there. God's welcoming us into his family, that we have a place with him eternally. We have a place with him right now. And so I just want to offer, if anyone's here today and you have never felt welcomed into a family before, I just want to say that to you, that God welcomes you as you are right now. And I think that some people in here just need to hear that. So I'm just going to pray for you, and then we're going to close. And just want to remind you as we end, if you're here for your first time, I'd love to get a chance to meet you. But even if not, if you could fill out a Connect card and drop it off at the welcome table, we'd love to connect with you. And everyone is welcome to stay. Please stay. We've got so much fun stuff out there. There's a bunch of, we're cooking like 250 hot dogs. We've got some water games. And so if you got kids, you should stay. If you don't have kids, you can stay. We've got lawn games out there. It's going to be fun. So let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for the fact that you have given us a place in your family, that you have called us in to be your sons and daughters. And I pray for anyone here today who's feeling distant from you or distant from community, that you would begin to just draw their hearts in, God, and let them know how much you love them. If you're here today and you've never said yes to Jesus, you've never said, yes, God, I received the gift of life that you're holding out to me. Today is the day where you could make that decision. And just pray, Jesus, I accept your gift of life and salvation. So God, we just thank you that you love us. And we pray that the water in the dunk tank would not be that cold. Amen. Amen. All right, see you guys out there.